Happy Monday, everyone. It's time to read the Fort Dodge Messenger for Monday, January 20th, 2020. How about that? 2020. I am reading to you from the studio in Friendship Haven in Fort Dodge. I'm Cindy. I'm glad you're listening, and we'll start with a look at today's weather and headlines from the front page. The weather today, high of 5, low of minus 10. Expect partly sunny skies with wind chill values as low as 25 below. All right. We have two stories on the front page and one repeat. The first story is entitled Pratt Honored. The second story is entitled There's an App for That. And then the third is a repeat article from Hometown Pride, a logo for the city. So here we go. First of all, there is a picture of Diane Pratt, a retired, talented, and gifted teacher for Fort Dodge Community School District, holding her award, which was the Outstanding Educator Award from the University of Iowa's Belen Blank International Center for the Gifted Education and Talented Development. And then there's a close-up picture of the award, too. Diane Pratt has spent the last 20 years of her teaching career dedicated to educating gifted learners in the Fort Dodge Community School District. In recognition of her years and dedication to gifted learners, the University of Iowa's Belen Blank International Center for Gifted Education and Talent Development presented Pratt with the 2019 Outstanding Educator Award during the center's annual recognition ceremony in October. According to Belen Blank, the Outstanding Educator Award is given to recognize an educator with outstanding achievements in the field of gifted education. I was so humbled and surprised, Pratt said, of learning about the award. The Belen Blank Center at the University of Iowa is an international center for the gifted development, and it's just very, very highly esteemed. So for them to recognize me with this award is just unfathomable. Almost. I was really surprised and humbled because there are so many teachers that do so many great and wonderful things in our profession, and I'm just a small part of it. Pratt started as the talented and gifted teacher for 5th and 6th graders at the former Fair Oaks Middle School in 2000. She continued teaching in the TAG program at the middle school level and eventually the high school level for many years. Most recently, she was the talented and gifted specialist at Fort Dodge Middle School and the district facilitator of gifted services. She also has been the advisor for gifted learners at Fort Dodge Senior High and the coordinator of the Fort Dodge Middle School STEM Academy Grant Program. Prior to working with TAG students, Pratt was a classroom teacher for 20 years. In her 20 years working with TAG students, she touched the lives of nearly 500 students. And at the end of 2019, Pratt very reluctantly retired. Every day when I would go to work, I learned so much more from my kids than they ever did from me, she said. I miss the daily interaction with the kids especially. Throughout her time as a TAG instructor, Pratt also served as a board member for the Iowa Talented and Gifted Association, including as president from 2010 to 2012, and on the National Association of Gifted Children Professional Standards Committee. This isn't the first time Pratt has been honored by Belen Blank. In 2000, she was the recipient of the ITAG Research Award and the David W. Belen Excellence in Teaching Award. Fort Dodge Superintendent Jesse Ulrich was proud to hear Pratt's recognition from the center. Mrs. Pratt has spent her entire career as an educator advocating and serving students, he said. Specifically, her passion, love, and advocacy for students who are gifted are undeniable within the Fort Dodge Community School District. As a lifelong servant, her professionalism and passion are characteristic and a model for future and present educators who have the privilege of working with this population of students. Pratt said her favorite part of working with TAG students in the district was being able to work with them for multiple years, not just at a single grade level. Every gifted learner is different, just like every learner is different, and they have very specific needs in order for them to develop. And that's just some of the most fun I have, just seeing how they've grown over the years and how they continue to develop. That's one of her quotes. Over the years, Pratt has received countless thank you notes from graduates and former students. She said she hopes through her time working with them, she's been able to instill a sense of believing in themselves, staying true to themselves, and a desire to learn more and question anything. Even in retirement, Pratt isn't done working and advocating for students. She serves on the ITAG Governance Committee, the NACG Professional Standards Committee, as a mentor to the new gifted teachers in Iowa, and as a consultant with support for teachers and districts who strive to improve their gifted services. I don't think I'll ever really be done, she said. It's just been my passion for so many years that anything I can do in any small way to help out or contribute, I want to do. Pratt said she is collaborating with some colleagues across the state to create a professional development course that can be taken online through the area education agencies for classroom teachers and instructional coaches to take. She said she's also planning on writing a student resource book to help give gifted students another tool to use when learning and solving problems. It's just been a really rewarding profession to me, Pratt said. Teaching is, of course, but when I got into this part of teaching, it had everything for a well-rounded career. It had struggle, it had roadblocks, it had celebrations, it had highs, lows, challenges. Everything that one could possibly want in a career, and I've just been really blessed to be in that part of education because it's been a good fit for me. Okay, next article. There's an app for that. Gowrie's Carlson, part of a group that was honored for creating service to assist farmers. Josh Carlson, and this was kind of out of Ames. I mean, it says Ames. The story's from Ames because of Iowa State. Josh Carlson was well into his senior year at Iowa State when he received unexpected news that made him smile. Carlson, a Southeast Valley High School graduate, was honored, along three of his fellow Cyclones, for the completion of a smartphone app over the summer during an internship with Landis Cooperative. The quartet was awarded the highest return on investment project in the OutSystems 2019 Low Code Innovation Awards. Along with Carlson, Josh Halber from Breda, Laura Minks from Columbus Junction, and Katie Collins from Adel developed software requirements, oversaw spring planning and design, tested the app, and calculated the approximately $100,000 return on investment. There were four projects that you could be a part of, and you listened to a description of each one of them, ranked them on which one you would like the most to the one you were least interested in, Carlson said. Allison Hewen, our project mentor, persistent company, and the internal IT team were people who we went to and helped us with this project. Alicia had the idea to create this app that would be intercompany for employees to use and record harvest hours per location. During the project, Carlson and his fellow interns worked through numerous battles that came up along the way. We found that there was a lot more work that goes into building an app than what you originally think, Carlson said. When you look at, like, Snapchat, any game you play on your cellular device, you have to plan what each page button is going to do and how it will function. We had to write stories and sprints. Those are in quotation marks. Stories are where we talk about each page and what it's going to do within that page. So, for one example, one of the pages we created was called Default Hours. Here the location manager had his locations that he was in charge of to pick from. We set it up that way so they didn't have to scroll through all of the Landis locations. They then picked out what they wanted for their default hours for Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., Saturday 7 to 7, and Sunday noon to 6. Once they set the times, then they would pick the date they wanted it to start and end. So if they chose September 20th as a start date and October 28th as the end date, every day in between, there, it would send messages out that was the time those locations were open for harvest hours. They would then be able to change it if need be, and there were hour change, maintenance delay, maintenance closure, weather delay, reopening, and request custom message. All of that was put into place to benefit the managers at each cooperative and make things run smoothly. In fact, Carlson himself took advantage of the program after it was fully created. Given these options, we felt covered most everything that could potentially happen at a cooperative. He said, a sprint is a two-week outlook of what we want to get accomplished in those weeks. It was very satisfying to see how the progress of the app was coming along. Persistent computer programmers building our app took what we envisioned and built it. It was also nice for me because I am a member and use the Landis customer app and had a vision on how I thought it would be beneficial for farmers for where this app should go and be. I also signed up for the notifications and received them during the harvest from the app that I created. Over 7,000 farmer members across more than 50 grain locations in 26 counties were given the chance to use this app built by the group, who were honored at the Next Step conference in Denver. For Carlson, the experience turned into a very beneficial one for now and possibly in the future. I think this has played a big impact on my life as I can take the skills learned from this project and apply them. I learned how to work in a small group and what it takes to make an app. I can also talk to the people that have helped us along the way during this project with questions, concerns, and future employment if something happens with my current plans. After graduating from Iowa State this semester with a major in agriculture studies and minors in agronomy and agriculture systems technology, Carlson plans to return home to work on the family farm alongside his father Jim and mother Jennifer, where they produce corn, soybeans, cattle, and hogs. I think he's going to be one prepared farmer. Okay, now for the repeat article from Hometown Pride, called A Logo for the City. And the byline says, Gargano Brothers pool resources to design logo for Fort Dodge's 150th. An interest in graphic design and loyalty to their hometown of Fort Dodge unite brothers Brendan, Christian, and Colin Gargano. So when they set out to start their own design business, the first thing they wanted was a project that would benefit Fort Dodge. Just what that project would be remained a mystery until Colin Gargano of Carlisle did some internet research and learned that the city received its official charter in 1869, 150 years ago. So this must be a repeat from 2019. I said, guys, this is perfect. Colin recalled, Brendan Gargano of Kansas City, Missouri, and Christian Gargano of Fort Dodge. And Colin Gargano decided last year that a 150th anniversary logo would be the first project of their new business called Other Brother Design Collective. We're doing this for free for the city, Brendan said. The brothers agreed early in the design process that images of the Olson Park Bandshell or the Fort Museum in Frontier Village are so common that they are, as Brendan put it, overdone. We were just trying to look for something different. They decided to feature the clock tower atop Webster County Courthouse. We just thought it was something that was really iconic, Brendan Gargano said. We thought it would be a cool thing to feature. Colin Gargano added the clock tower really symbolizes Fort Dodge. The logos were recreated by Brendan Gargano. Brendan started working real quick, Colin Gargano said, and as he worked, the brothers exchanged a series of text messages to fine-tune the designs. We love growing as designers by bouncing ideas off of each other, Christian said. But they still had to find out if there was any local interest in the 150th anniversary. To find out, Brendan Gargano sent out an email, including the proposed logos, to Councilman Dave Flattery last year. Flattery replied, writing that he wasn't aware of the 150th anniversary and didn't know if anyone in Fort Dodge knew anything about it. In a subsequent email, Flattery wrote to Brendan Gargano that he had talked to some other people and there was some interest in the anniversary. The Garganos had submitted about 8 designs. A committee consisting of Mayor Matt Bemrick, Councilman Lydia Scher, Chris Patrick, Executive Director of Main Street Fort Dodge, Eric Anderson, Director of the Blandon, historian Roger Natty, Corey Bardford, Advertising Director for the Messenger, and Flattery whittled the list down to two. The committee then asked Brendan for his input, and he suggested the city use both. The two designs were adopted by the council on March 25th. The designs are not reserved for official city business only. Gargano Brothers expect them to be used on t-shirts, medallions, and other items. They can be used for anything. And then there is a picture of the three brothers. It looks like it must have been taken at a wedding at some point where they all have their little boutonnieres on. Okay. Now to this date in history. The picture from 2005 is Let There Be Peace on Earth is being played on a piano as close friends Joyce DeHaan and Natasha Rogers share a moment of silence during the 16th annual, that was in 2005, Martin Luther King Day prayer breakfast at the First Presbyterian Christian Life Center. The poll this week is, do you favor ratifying the Equal Rights Amendment and adding it to the Constitution? And you may answer and see at www.messengernews.net and see the result on Sundays. Okay, today is Monday, January 20th. The 20th day of 2020. And there are 346 days left. So back in 2001, George Walker Bush became the 43rd president after one of the most turbulent elections in U.S. history. In 1964, Capitol Records released the album Meet the Beatles. In 1981, Iran released 52 Americans it had held hostage for 444 days, minutes after the presidency had passed from Jimmy Carter to Ronald Reagan. In 1986, the United States observed the first federal holiday in honor of Martin Luther King, Jr. In 2009, Barack Obama was sworn in as the nation's 44th, as well as the first African-American president. Russian natural gas began flowing into the Ukraine after a two-week cutoff that had left parts of Europe cold and dark. 10 years ago, National Intelligence Director Dennis Blair conceded missteps in the government's handling of the Christmas Day 2009 airline bombing attempt in a testimony before the Senate Homeland Security Committee. 5 years ago, President Barack Obama, undaunted by the new Republican majority in Congress, issued a sweeping challenge in his State of the Union address to do more for the poor and middle class and to end the nasty partisan political fight that had characterized his 6 years in office. Some things never change. 1 year ago, the year's only total lunar eclipse was visible throughout North and South America. It took place during the year's first supermoon, when a full moon appears a little bigger and brighter thanks to its slightly closer position. And the thought for today comes from Letitia Landon, who is an English poet from 1802 to 1838. She didn't live very long, did she? Whatever people in general do not understand, they are always prepared to dislike. The incomprehensible is always the obnoxious. Well, that's a pretty deep one, I would say. Okay, shall we see if the typical Monday things are happening in Fort Dodge on the community calendar? That means the Fort Dodge Rotary Club is meeting at 11:45 at the Willow Ridge Golf Course. The Humboldt Dakota City Noon Kiwanis will meet at noon at Vinny's Barbecue. The Sac City Kiwanis Noon will meet in the Sac City Community Center. Al-Anon Non-Smoking Club will meet at noon today at the First United Methodist Church in Fort Dodge on North 10th. And the AA Al-Anon Club in Fort Dodge will meet at noon and 7 at 12 North 7th. The Art Club meets today at 1:30 p.m. in 420 Kenyon Road in the Rose Legler Room. The Alzheimer's Support Group meets today in Algona at Windsor Manor from 5 to 6. in Webster City. All Addictions Anonymous from 5:30 to 6:30 at the Trinity Lutheran Church. The Lion's Den Dance is from 6 to 9 p.m. tonight at the former Isaac Walton Lodge in Expo Drive with a variety of music. Bring your own beverage and snack and hopefully a $5 donation. Of course, there's bingo tonight at the Fort Museum in Frontier Village. Starting early bird start at 6:30, but the doors open at 5. The Duplicate Bridge Club plays tonight at Citizen Central at 6:30. Women's AA meeting tonight in Fort Dodge at the YWCA at 7. Beta Sigma Phi Sorority Beta Beta Master Chapter, 7 p.m. tonight at Carroll Rhodes Home at 2502 22nd Avenue North. The Fort Dodge Choral Society will be practicing tonight at Grace Lutheran Church from 7:30 to 9:30. In Manson, there is an AA open meeting from 7:30 p.m. at St. Thomas Catholic Church. And in Humboldt or Dakota City or both, the Young People's Group will for NA will be meeting at 8 p.m. at the Humboldt County Courthouse in Dakota City. There's a little announcement here. Oh my, about Roundup. Whew. So, Community Christian School will have a 3- and 4-year-old preschool roundup on February 4th from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the school at 2406 9th and a half Avenue South. Parents and students can come and learn about the preschool program, get acquainted with the teachers and the classrooms. CCS has limited space available for 3- and 4-year-olds in the 2021 school year. 4-year-old preschool is free due to the Iowa Preschool Program Grant. Scholarships are available for the 3-year-old program if needed. Before and after extended care is also available while spaces are open. And so for more information, you can call the school office at 573-3011. Today's editorial says, "Today we honor a dream of justice. Martin Luther King Jr. has a message that remains relevant." Martin Luther King Jr. Day being observed today is an appropriate time to recall an exceptional person, but more importantly, it's a time to recommit the nation to the cause for which King died and the legacy he left for all of us. The famed civil rights leader, assassinated April 4th, 1968, was a preacher with a message as important today as it was more than 4 decades ago. He saw God's words as fundamentally connected to his call for equality, nonviolence, and justice. King's religious faith was the heart, center, and soul of his work. Without God's word, King believed there is no moral authority from which mankind may work for the higher good. Assassinated at age 39, King never knew just how much of his dream would be realized in America. He became an agent for social change and a martyr for the cause he so fervently espoused. Had King lived, he no doubt would be particularly proud that the country he loved elected and reelected Barack Obama to be its president after campaigns in which race wasn't an especially divisive issue. Obama's presidency is strong evidence of the headway Americans have made in making King's dream of racial harmony a reality. The Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. provided a message that is as relevant today as when he lived and led. Each of us is in a position to improve society in the ways of justice and mercy. We can do so by building bridges across the artificial and arbitrary boundaries our world creates. That is the best way to be faithful to King's message of honor and honor his memory. All right. Let's see, I think I have time to read this before the obituaries. It is an AP article, but it's about the census, and I think it is very, very interesting. It says, in a tiny Alaska town, the census begins, and this is out of Toksook Bay, Alaska. There are no restaurants in Toksook, no motels or movie theaters. There also aren't any factories or roads. But the first Americans to be counted in the 2020 census live in this tiny community of 661
on the edge of the American expanse. Their homes are huddled together in a windswept Bering Sea village, painted vivid lime green, purple, or neon blue to help distinguish the signs of life from a frigid winter winterscape that makes it hard to tell where the frozen sea ends and the village begins. Fish drying racks hang outside some front doors, and you're more likely to find a snowmobile or four-wheeler in the driveway than a truck or SUV. In this isolated outpost that looks a little like other towns in the rest of the United States, the official attempt to count everyone living in the country will begin Tuesday. That's tomorrow. The decennial U.S. Census has started in rural Alaska out of tradition and necessity ever since the U.S. purchased the territory from Russia in 1867. Once the spring thaw hits, the town empties as the many residents scatter for traditional hunting and fishing grounds in the frozen grounds in January, make it easier to get around by March, turns to marsh that's difficult to traverse. The mail service is spotty and the internet connectivity unreliable, which makes door-to-door surveying important. For those reasons, they have to start early. The rest of the country, plus urban areas of Alaska, such as Anchorage, will begin in mid-March. Some of the biggest challenges to the count are especially difficult in Taksuk Bay, one of the handful of villages on Nelson Island, which is about 500 miles west of Anchorage and only accessible by boat or plane. Some people speak only Alaskan native languages, such as Yupik, or speak one language but don't read it. The U.S. Census provides questionnaires in 13 languages and other guides, glossaries, and materials, and many more. But none is one of the 20 official Alaska native languages. So local groups are bringing together translators and language experts to translate wording and intent so local community leaders could trust, understand, and relay the importance of the census. It wasn't an easy task. Language can be very specific to a culture. For example, there's no equivalent for apportionment, the system used to determine representation in Congress, in the language of Dinaki, which is also the Koyakan Athabascan. So translators use terms for divvying up moose meat in a village as an example for finding cultural relevancy, said Vero de Silveiro, executive director of the agency partner Alaska Public Internet Interest Research Group. Wow. When the official count begins this week, the Census Bureau has hired four people to go door to door, and at least two of them will be fluent in English and Yupik. Places such as Taksuk Bay that run this risk of being undercounted also desperately need the federal funds assigned based on population for health care, education, and general infrastructure. Yet mistrust of the federal government is high. That's true in many parts of the U.S., but especially Alaska, where many have strong libertarian views, and even more in a rural community where everyone knows everyone and someone asking for personal information is seen with suspicion. The number one barrier to getting an accurate count throughout Alaska is concern about privacy and confidentiality and an inherent distrust of the federal government, said Gabriel Lehman, chairman of the Alaska Census Working Group. And that attitude is fairly pervasive in some of our more rural and remote communities. The census is entirely confidential, Lehman reassures people, and the Census Bureau can't give the information to any law enforcement or immigration official or even to a landlord if you report if you have 14 people living in your rental. Violating that privacy could land a census worker behind bars with a hefty fine. When the count begins on Tuesday, a Yupik elder, who is part of the well-known Eskimo dancing group, will be the first one counted. Lizzie Chimuguk, whose age is not known because records weren't kept, but is anywhere from 89 to 93, is the grandma for the whole community, said Robert Pitka, the tribal administrator of the, Nunukuyuk Traditional Council in Taksuk Bay. Stephen Dillingham, the director of the U.S. Census Bureau, will be on hand for Tuesday's start. I never knew it started in Alaska. I just think that's totally, totally interesting. And the fact that that guy's going to go all the way up there, the director, to start it, kind of crazy. Okay. Let me remind you that
You are listening to the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, an Iowa radio reading information service for the blind and print disabled. The Messenger can be heard at 8 a.m. and 3 o'clock p.m. If you have any questions or comments about the program or any IRIS program, you can give us a call at 515-243-6833. And now for today's obituaries. Our first obituary is Luann Dutcher. Luann Dutcher, 65, of Fort Dodge, passed away on Friday, January 17th at the University of Iowa Hospital and Clinics in Iowa City. A memorial service will be held 11 a.m. on Tuesday, January 21st, at 2020, at the Gunderson Funeral Chapel in Fort Dodge. A time of gathering for family and friends will be from 10 a.m. to 11 on Tuesday before the funeral. Burial will take place later that afternoon at Highland Cemetery near Bayard, Iowa. Luann is survived by her three daughters, Stacy, spouse Brian Newman of Alexandria, Louisiana, Carrie, spouse Derek Seaman of Muscatine, Tricia, spouse Tom Boobin of Sycamore, Illinois. 12 grandchildren, her brother Craig, spouse Luann Nickvinda of Fort Dodge, and two sisters, Karen J. Cox of Fort Dodge and Connie Gardner of Henderson, Nevada. She was preceded in death by her parents and her husband, Daryl Crossier, C-R-O-S-I-E-R. Luann Nickvinda was born December 1st, 1954 in Fort Dodge. She attended school in Fort Dodge and later received her GED. Luann graduated from DMAC with a degree in nursing. She worked in area hospitals and had retired in 2019 from community health here in Fort Dodge. Luann loved gardening, being outdoors, and her dog, Zip. Luann had been married to Bernie Halverson, and the couple later divorced. In 1993, she married Daryl Crossier, and they made their home in Coon Rapids. Daryl died suddenly in April of 2007. Luann later married Bill Dutcher, and they later divorced. Next, Robert Campadilly of Humboldt. Robert Campadilly, 80, of Humboldt, passed away Friday, January 17th at Trinity Regional Medical Center in Fort Dodge. Among survivors are his wife, Chris. A prayer service will be held 4 p.m. with visitation from 4:30 to 6:30 on Tuesday, January 21st. Private family burial will be in the Havelock Cemetery on Wednesday. The Mason Linhart Funeral Home in Humboldt is in charge of the arrangements, and of course you can look online for them for more information. Dorothy Talbot. This is from Rockwell City. Dorothy Talbot, 95, passed away Saturday, January 18th, 2020, at Shady Oaks Care Center in Lake City. Funeral services will be 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, January 22nd, at the United Methodist Church in Rockwell City, with Pastor Anita Bain officiating. Burial will be at the Rose Hill Cemetery, Rockwell City, with military graveside rites by the United States Navy Honor Guard and the Rockwell City Veterans Organization. Visitation will be 4 to 7 Tuesday, January 21st at the Palmer Swank Funeral Home in Rockwell City. Dorothy is survived by her daughter Sandra Malsby of Rockwell City, 5 grandchildren and 10 great-grandchildren. From Mallard, Beverly Compton. Beverly Compton, age 88, died Saturday, January 18th at the Palo Alto County Hospital. Services will be held Wednesday, 10:30 at the Harris Funeral Home in Mallard, with burial to follow in Rush Lake Cemetery. Visitation is from 5 to 7 Tuesday at the funeral home, and a complete obituary can be read at www.harrisfuneralservices.com. From Clarion, Carol Rohrer. Funeral services will be 10:30 Wednesday at the First Lutheran Church in Clarion. Visitation will be 5 to 7 Tuesday at the Ewing Funeral Home in Clarion and 1 hour prior to the service on Wednesday. And more information can be found at ewingfh.com. Paul Olson from Woolstock. Paul A. Olson, 73, passed away Friday, January 17th at the Iowa Specialty Hospital in Clarion. A celebration for Paul Olson will be held at a later date. So the announcements today
from Laufensweiler, Pauline M. McIntyre, age 86. That funeral will be today at the Marion Home Chapel, and visitation 1 hour prior, but it doesn't tell us the time. And Jim R. Hanch, age 70, his services are pending with Laufensweiler's. And then Gunderson, I already read about Luann Dutcher, 11 a.m. Tuesday, with visitation an hour prior to the service at Gunderson's on Tuesday. Okay. I believe we're going on to sports. And there is a huge picture, almost half the page, of Patrick Mahomes as he celebrates after a touchdown pass when Kansas City are Super Bowl bound. Many of us are interested in that. First time in 50 years. So that's a biggie. And then there's an article that, of course, the Hawkeyes dominated in wrestling with 7th-ranked Nebraska over the weekend, 26-6. That was Saturday night. So that was a big win. That Spencer Lee we hear a lot about, he had an 18-0 technical fall at 125. So that's a pretty big win, I would say. And then, let's see, we'll keep going here. San Francisco is joining the Pack, or joining the Kansas City in the Super Bowl as they beat the Packers last night. So that was quite a game. And let's see, how about some area wrestling? Southeast Valley picks up a pair of wins over the weekend. They defeated Sioux Central and West Bend Mallard last Thursday in a triangular. So there's those news. And Pocahontas area defeated Ridgeview and Washington of Cherokee in a quadrangular last Thursday. Let's see, more area news. The Iowa women beat Wisconsin over the weekend. Drake men struggled at Southern Illinois. Northern Iowa women won pretty handily over the weekend. The Iowa State women came back, and they won over the weekend. In the University of Northern Iowa wrestling squad was in Colorado Springs, and they won. And, of course, we always watch former Fort Dodge senior high wrestler, state champion Drew Bennett, and he clinched a victory at 133 with a 9-7 win. So let's see. And now the Tritons. I didn't mention Drake women. They beat Evansville, Illinois over the weekend. So geez, things in Iowa are going pretty good. Tritons stay hot at home. So the Triton women showed a home court advantage, and they stretched their current win streak to 3 and improved to a 10-2 record at home with a victory over Des Moines area Sunday afternoon. So they are in the swing of things. And number 3 DMAC was too much for the Iowa Central men over the weekend. They played on Sunday afternoon as well. And they got beat 82-54. Andrew Gibb had a team high of 6 rebounds in that match. Iowa Central is now 7-11 overall and 2-3 in the conference. And their next match is Wednesday when they go to Mason City. And then if you're a tennis fan, you might be watching some on TV with in Australia. And both Naomi Osaka and Serena Williams won their opening matches. So we'll see what else is on TV today on the Hot Corner and sports news. In 1982, on this date, the International YMCA in Springfield, Massachusetts, is the site of the first official basketball game. Oh, 1892, excuse me. Peach baskets were used, and it wasn't until 1905 that someone removed the bottoms. Can you imagine? 1892.
In 1952, George Mikan scores 61 points, a career high, to lead Minneapolis Lakers to a 91-81 double overtime victory over the Rochester Royals. In 1968, Elvin Hayes scores 39 points to lead Houston to a 71-69 victory at the end of UCLA's 47-game winning streak. 1980, President Carter announces the U.S. Olympic team will not participate in Summer Olympics in Moscow to protest the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan the previous month. In 1980, Terry Bradshaw passes for 309 yards and sets two passing records to help Pittsburgh beat the L.A. Rams 31-19 and become the first team to win four Super Bowls. 1985, Joe Montana passes for a Super Bowl record 331 yards and three touchdowns to lead the San Francisco 49ers to a 38-16 victory over the Dolphins. Roger Craig scores a record three touchdowns. 2013, San Francisco's Frank Gore runs for a pair of second-half touchdowns and the 49ers rebound from a 17-0 deficit to beat Atlanta in the NFC Championship game. Okay, for you basketball fans, college basketball. On CBS Sports Network at 4 is Sacred Heart at Robert Morris, followed by Bucknell at Colgate. On ESPN, North Carolina State at Virginia at 6, followed by Oklahoma at Baylor. And on ESPNU, you can watch Texas at West Virginia. Pros tonight in basketball. This afternoon you can watch Toronto at Atlanta at 1:30 p.m. At Atlanta. That's weird that they have a Monday afternoon game. On TNT, starting at 4 p.m., New Orleans at Memphis, followed by Lakers at Boston, followed by Golden State at Portland. Women's college basketball on the Big Ten Network, you can watch at 5. Michigan State at Rutgers, followed by Indiana at Maryland, and on ESPN, Mississippi State at South Carolina. Pro hockey, 2 p.m. this afternoon, Detroit at Colorado on NHL. And that tennis I talked about starts at 6 p.m. on the Tennis Network and 8 p.m. on ESPN2. And then the quote today is from Andy Reid in making it to the Super Bowl, where he said, "Fired up to go to Miami. Got to get on a diet so I can fit into my clothes." Seriously, that's what he said. Oh my goodness, he's a funny guy. All right. Okay, turning to the back page of the paper, I'll just mention this is kind of crazy. There's a whole article about how the Canadian military's mobilized to help Newfoundland and Canada dig out because they've had such a massive blizzard. And so you read the whole article and they don't tell you how much snow they got. Record-breaking snow amounts. And the forecast call for more, but it doesn't tell us how much. But I saw on TV that it was huge. Huge, huge, huge. So anyway, they're digging out up there in Newfoundland. And then there's a long article, but I am going to read it because it's out of Webster City. Webster City doctor sentenced to 2 months and Latella fined for false claims. Dr. Joseph X. Latella, 76, of Webster City, was sentenced on Thursday to 2 months in federal prison and fined after previously pleading guilty to making false statements related to health care matters. As part of a plea agreement, Latella also agreed to pay $316,000, around there, to resolve False Claims Act allegations related to claims he submitted for routine visits for nursing facility residents between January of 2014 and November 30th of 2018. The United States alleged that Latella, a longtime primary care doctor in Webster City, submitted claims to Medicare and Medicaid for the most intensive and expensive claim code for such visits when, in fact, he was not performing services sufficient to justify the use of that code. Like all providers, doctors who treat Iowa's elderly population have a duty to provide needed medical services and bill accurately for those services. By his alleged actions, Dr. Latella scammed the healthcare system and left elderly patients and their families wondering if the patients received the care they needed. This is from Peter E. Deegan, Jr., United States Attorney for the Northern District of Iowa. When our office's civil investigators made an official inquiry into billing practices, Dr. Latella tried to throw the government off the scent by lying and creating false records. This settlement and prosecution demonstrates my office's focus on ensuring Medicare and Medicaid beneficiaries receive the care to which they are entitled. Public monies are well spent, and individuals or entities responding to my office's civil investigative demands provide complete and truthful responses. In 2018, investigation by the U.S. Attorney found Latella was billing more than 93% of his nursing home visits to Medicare under most intensive and expensive codes. For those claims to be valid, a doctor typically must spend 35 minutes at the patient's bedside and on the patient's facility floor or unit. Medicare paid more than $94 for those claims, but would have paid no more than $32 if the least expensive claim code for a routine 10-minute visit had been billed. In June 2016, a Medicare contractor sent Latella a letter warning him that his billing patterns were significantly more expensive than other doctors. In 2018, Latella submitted sworn written answers to the U.S. attorney in which he falsely declared that with respect to certain Medicare claims, he had spent approximately 30 minutes for each of 12 patients' care at two nursing homes. About one particular date in October 27th, Latella falsely swore he had started visiting the nursing home patients at 7:30 a.m. and completed my visits with each patient at 5:30. However, a federal agent had conducted in-person surveillance of Latella on that date, and Latella was only on the site for 47 minutes and did not visit the second nursing home at all. The administrator of the first nursing home estimated that Latella spent approximately 5 minutes with each patient during the visits. Latella made further false statements about claims in January and February of 2018, which the Medicaid Fraud Control Unit discovered through videotaped surveillance. Latella billed 9 claims for services alleged provided to 9 Medicare patients in February 2018. And then this just goes on and on. In order to cover up his overbilling scheme, Latella provided the United States attorney with fraudulent, recreated retreatment notes. The U.S. attorney said Latella's staff had a practice of shredding all notes for all nursing home patients immediately after billing Medicare for those services. So there were no records of any treatment. To recreate the notes, Latella contacted the nursing home administrators and asked for copies of patients' charts. Latella was the medical director of two nursing homes at which he was billing fraudulently. He was also the Hamilton County coroner. He also operated a private medical practice until closing in May 2019. In total, Latella admitted that between January 2014 and 2018, he was paid $107,980 for false claims. He also received unjustified payments totaling $9,218. As part of his plea agreement, Latella has agreed to repay those payments to Medicare and Medicaid. The civil case was handled by Assistant U.S. Attorneys Melissa Carrington and Jacob Schunk. So that's a story out of Webster City. All right. Well, we have just a few minutes, so we'll see if we can find a couple lighthearted things to take us through to the end here from Reader's Digest. This is kind of an interesting one if you are into vocabulary. There's an article here that says 7 expressions that ought to exist in our native tongue but don't, and I hope I can pronounce them. So the first one claimed is a Russian word called Tosca. And it says Vladimir Nabokov describes it as no single word in English renders all the shades of Tosca
at its deepest and most painful, it's a sensation of great spiritual anguish, often without a specific cause. At less morbid levels, it's a dull ache in the soul, a longing with nothing to long for, a sick pining, a vague restlessness, mental throes, yearning. In particular cases, it may be the desire for somebody or something specific, nostalgia, love, sickness. At the lowest level, it grades into boredom. Tosca. Oh boy, now get this one. This is from an indigenous language of Tierra del Fuego. And I have to try and pronounce it. Mami Jalapenatepe. Mami Jalapenatepe. And this wordless yet meaningful look shared. Oh, this is good. The wordless yet meaningful look shared by two people who both desire to initiate something but are reluctant to start. I don't know if you've ever seen that look, but that's an interesting take on that word. From Indonesia, Jayus. A joke so poorly told and so unfunny, you cannot help but laugh. Have you ever heard one of those? From the Inuit, they always have crazy, let's see, Iksquarpak, to go outside to check if anyone is coming. That's interesting. From the Scottish, tartle, the act of hesitating while introducing someone because you've forgotten his name. I think I am guilty of that one. From Brazilian Portuguese, cafune, C-A-F-U-N-E with the little accent over it. The act of tenderly running one's fingers through someone's hair. I don't think we have a word for that in our vocabulary. Oh boy, from German. Torschlusspanik. They should have put the phonetic spelling in here. Torschlusspanik. Translate literally as gate-closing panic. But its contextual meaning refers to the fear of diminishing opportunities as one ages. I think they only gave us 7. Okay. Here's a few jokes. We only have a couple minutes. Louis and his wife are listening to the radio when they hear the weather report. A snow emergency has been declared. You must park your cars on the odd-numbered side of the street. So Louis gets up and moves his car. 2 days later, the same thing. A snow emergency has been declared. Park your cars on the even-numbered sides of the streets. Louis gets up and does what he's told. 3 days later, there will be a foot of snow today. Park your cars on the... And then the power goes out. What should I do? A confused Louis asks his wife. This time, she said, why don't you just leave the car in the garage? How ridiculous. I've just been on a once-in-a-lifetime holiday, and I tell you what, never again. Yep, that's kind of the truth. Okay. Here is a little fiction contest. Celebrates purposely awful opening sentences to imaginary novels. So they pick two that say these are the best of the worst, I guess. Awful opening sentences to imaginary novels. As Holmes, who had a nose for danger, quietly fingered the bloody knife and eyed the various body parts strewn along the dark, deserted highway, he placed his ear to the ground and, with his heart in his throat, silently mouthed to his companion, "Arm yourself, Watson. There is an evil hand afoot ahead." Little play on words there. That's pretty pathetic. Okay. Through the verdant plains of Northumbria walked Waylon Oglethorpe. And as he walked, the clouds whispered his name. The birds of the air sang his praises. And the beasts of the fields, from the smallest to the greatest, said, "There goes the most noble among men." In other words, a typical stroll for a schizophrenic ventriloquist with delusions of grandeur. Well, they worked real hard at that one, didn't they? When someone tells you that something defies description, you can be pretty sure he's going to have to go at it anyway. Yep, that's true. Just like people who say, well, I may have told you this before, and then they tell you the same story. My go-getter coworker asked me, Andrea, why put off till tomorrow what you can do today? And I replied, on the chance that I get fired this afternoon and I don't have to do it all? A man with a huge grin approached a priest. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned, he said. I've spent the week with 7 beautiful women. Do not fret, my son, said the priest. All you need to do is take 7 lemons, squeeze the juice into a glass, and drink the juice. Will that cleanse my sin from me? No, but it'll wipe the stupid smile off your face. Oh, that's terrible. If you are always straightening things, you have OCD. If you are always eating things, you have obesity. Get it? O-B-C-D in capital letters. O-B-C-D. That's kind of clever. All right. I think that's the end of my jokes for today. I don't think there is one. I'll have to look for more jokes for next week. Well, I hope you guys stay warm today because it is a cold one out there. Let's recap the weather for the week. If I can find it in the paper. They tend to... Sorry about the rattling. They tend to sometimes put it in different places. Okay, here we go. We already did today. Tomorrow, high of 24, low of 14 with a lot of sun. Wednesday, a wintry mix could be likely with a high of 37, hence the mix, and a low of 29. Thursday, a chance of snow with a high of 35 and a low of 25. Friday again, a chance of snow, high around 33 and a low of 20. Saturday, mostly cloudy, high of 30, low around 17. And Sunday, partly sunny, with a high of 33 and a low of 23. So if we can get through today with this frigid temps, then, you know, the rest of the week, can I say it might feel warm? Don't know about that. Our sunset is kind of creeping back. It's at 5:13. So hopefully we notice that it's not quite as dark as early. Okay. Last year at this time we were at 9 degrees, so we're a little bit under that. Okay, well, that brings us to the end of today's reading of the messenger, and I thank you for listening and hope that you have a very, very, very good day. Thanks for listening to Iris. We wish you all a dream to bless, a star to guide. Stay warm. Read a good book.